Hayden Paddon is the country's most successful rally driver. As a young boy growing up in Geraldine, he set his sights on driving in the World Rally Championship. And through 20 years of hard work and skill, he made it there in 2016, winning the Rally Argentina for Hyundai. But along with the highs, there have been the lows. In 2017, while driving in the Rally of Monte Carlo, he had an accident which killed a spectator. The same year, he split with his partner of 10 years. And last year, he was unceremoniously dropped from the Hyundai Motorsport team. The chance of a one-off drive for M Sport Ford and Rally Finland in July this year ended in heartbreak after a high-speed crash during practice caused by an unexpected rock in the road. These are the ups and downs of such a career. Hayden Paddon's told his story in a new biography called Driven. He's based in Cromwell, where he's working on some big plans that we'll hear about in a moment. And I think he's pulled safely off the side of the road, somewhere between Cromwell and Queenstown right now. It's probably a bit chilly, Hayden. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, nice and fresh down here. Perfect.
As good always. Cool. That's good.
Yep.
Please, for listeners either familiar with or not familiar with at all, what it is like to race in a series like the World Rally Championship. I've just opened the page at your chapter, Making History in Argentina. And on and off the course, this is very intense stuff, isn't it? Tell me a little bit more about the day-to-day experience of it.
Yeah, like at the end of the day, it's pretty phenomenal when you're representing a global manufacturer in a world championship. And, you know, here in New Zealand, rally, okay, it's quite big within the community that we have here, but in terms of, you know, the overall picture of sports here in New Zealand, it's actually quite a small sport. You go to places in Europe, South America, Scandinavia, rally's massive. You know, you go into places with hundreds of thousands of spectators over 3 days, and, you know, there's a whole country that really embraces the rallies. And then, of course, there's the pressure, as I say, when you're representing a global manufacturer, and at that level, in any professional sport, it's very cutthroat. You know, you have to deliver results, and there's no excuses if you don't. So, yeah, there's a lot of pressure, a lot of people looking and watching, and but at the end of the day, once you're in the car, you know, you put on your helmet, you go into your zone, and that's sort of like, I guess you could say, my happy place, and where things sort of just naturally happen, and you just get into a bit of a rhythm.
There are, as in any top global sport, the characters and the personalities and the mind games. And you begin this chapter talking about Seb Ogier and a confrontation you had, actually, of sorts at a media conference here. Tell me a little bit more about the rivalries, the people who are always looking over their shoulders at the person behind them, or the person just behind them who are always looking to overtake them. How intense does it get?
Yeah, look, I think rally is a type of sport where generally most of the rivalry between everyone's quite friendly. But at the same time, we're all very, very competitive people. You know, we wouldn't be at that level if we didn't all want to be there to win. So, of course, the competition takes over, and particularly with your teammates. You know, when you're in the team with two other drivers in the same team with the same car, same equipment, same personnel, then there is no excuses why you're faster or slower than your teammates. So your number one priority is always to try and be ahead of your teammates. And then, of course, then you get on to trying to beat the other competitors from the other team. So, the rivalry is very, very fierce. But in general terms, you know, apart from maybe one or two, you generally get on well outside the car and between events. And, you know, rallies generally always have quite that sort of nice, friendly atmosphere around it.
If you are going to win a stage in the World Rally Championships, what does it take? I mean, what are you and your co-driver planning and doing, and exactly how did that win unfold?
Yeah, look, it's a massive process from the weeks leading up to the rally. Like a world championship, 13 rallies a year, so you got to do it 13 times, from the testing in Europe beforehand, 2 or 3 weeks beforehand, to the planning in the workshop with the engineers, going through all the strategies, what might happen, what might not happen. And then, of course, we spent 8 days on site at each event, from the 2 or 3 days of going out on the road, writing the pace notes and the reconnaissance, and then 3 days of competition. And, you know, the World Championship now is so intensely competitive that you're fighting for tenths of a second. So you have to be absolutely on the limit everywhere for 3 days of competition, on stages that are changing with the conditions, the rocks, the weather conditions. There's just so many variables, and that's why we love it as well. So, you know, that Argentina one was special because, you know, we fought very hard for it for a whole week. And for it to all come down to the last stage on Sunday afternoon was, you know, a nice way to try and win that.
What was that last drive? What was it, the conditions like? Are we up in the El Condor, I think? What was it you had to do to finish the win?
Yeah, we're up in the top of the Andes. So, you know, Sebastian Ogier, who was the world champion at the time, was at our heels. He just took 20-odd seconds out of us in the penultimate stage, and we went into that last stage only 2 seconds ahead, and I think I was, along with the rest of the rally world, that thought he was going to go flying by us. But, yeah, we had that altercation, I guess you could say, on Saturday afternoon at the media conference, and it just sparked a bit of inner anger and a bit of extra inner drive to go, look, we've come this far from when I started in go-karts, from the whole week of that rally to everything, to, you know, I've got a chance to win a rally here. So, and then you just went into a subconscious state of mind for that stage and basically drove the stage of my life. You hear many sports people talk about it sometimes with flipping a switch or going into that zone, and that's exactly what happened. And then, you know, the stage was probably one of the best stages I drove, but also one of the easiest stages I ever drove. So, yeah, it was pretty surreal.
You were a second ahead instead of a second behind all the time, or half a second, I imagine, or less. What did it mean to you to win it?
Yeah, like it was very important. Like, it felt like a big breakthrough. As you know, at that stage, we're still moving through the ranks, you know, from first stage wins to first podium finishes to the first win. And, you know, the ultimate goal was always to be trying to become world champion, and this just felt like another step. So, yeah, there probably is some regret that maybe I didn't appreciate it or enjoy it enough at the time, because while it was a great moment and it was great to share it with the team and some Kiwis that had travelled over there with us, basically, you know, from the next day onwards, it was about the next rally and how we're going to do it again and how we're going to repeat it, and just raising the bar and raising the expectations of myself and from everyone else. So, the focus was purely on how we're going to continue doing this.
Why was this your sport? Growing up in Geraldine, your dad was into rallying, and was it as simple as that? You got introduced to it early.
Yeah, my father, I was driving before I was born, so, you know, as a toddler, he was out doing rallies, and I'd be along at the rallies as well. And, I think it was just introducing to me from a very, very young age, and it just always felt normal. It felt like the normal thing to go away in the weekend to go rallying, or, you know, late nights in the workshop, or dad was away working on race cars or something like that, and that's just a way of life. So, started from there, and been an addiction that I haven't been able to shake since.
What did you begin in, the old go-kart?
Yes, the old go-kart. So started on that when I was 6 years old, and it was just a great way to obviously learn the basics of driving. That was a home-built kart that my father built for me, and then went through the ranks from there through regional and a little bit of national go-karts over the period of about 6 years before we went into cars. So it was a great way to start. And you see a lot of motorsport drivers, 9 times out of 10, they'll start in go-karts from a young age, and they can learn that racecraft and learn that car control and everything that becomes quite, you know, crucial later on.
So we moved from a go-kart powered by a chainsaw engine to your first car, and how memorable was that?
Yeah, the brick, the Mini. So, I've always got fond memories of the Mini. I got that when I was 13. So I saved a bit of pocket money, and after selling the go-kart and everything, I think we paid $500, and we put a tank of gas in it and went to the first event there in Ashburton, and started from there, really. And then over the coming years, just tried to, you know, make it go faster and modify it, and unfortunately ended up rolling it into a ball a few years later. But, you know, that Mini always had a soft spot for me.
You write openly in the book about tough times growing up, your parents' separation and other pressures, bullying at school. How important was it going through those emotional experiences and what was happening to have this outlet?
Yeah, I think it was very important that I had something to stay focused on. I was certainly not so happy through those early teenage years for 3 or 4 or 5 years. You know, a lot of people go through difficult times at that sort of time of their life, and, you know, it's no different for me, from, you know, stuff that was going on with the family to stuff that was happening at school, and I basically didn't really want to be anywhere. But my one outlet was I loved driving. So, you know, that was what I always looked forward to, was going out racing with my Mini every second weekend, or How was I going to find money to fund it? Or, you know, even later on in school, when I probably should have been spending more time at school, my release was going out on the back roads and driving my car to get away from the unhappiness at school. And that release is, I guess, what saw me through. You know, my life could have gone either way at that stage back then. So, but I just had that one focus and one thing that I loved, and, you know, I don't regret that at all.
You also write openly about food being... I don't know whether it was a comfort or whether it was just something you really enjoyed, but you were overeating and you were putting on weight. And was that emotional again, do you think, or was it, you know, just a young guy not necessarily following the food pyramid? What was your experience of it?
Yeah, at that young age, you know, obviously my parents were going through some difficult times, so... on one side, yeah, they were struggling to deal with this, and food was a bit of an outlet. And of course, when you're 11, 12 years old, when you're a kid, if you're offered junk food and it's sitting in the cupboard all the time, then of course you take it. So, you know, at that age, you probably don't understand quite enough about food until it becomes apparent when you get through those high school years that maybe your image doesn't fit in quite as well as others. And then by that stage, habits are already established, and then the way that you try and get away from it again is that you eat more. You know, it was a comfort blanket, and so yeah, it was difficult. It wasn't until maybe later on that once you actually start to understand it a little bit more that you maybe realise that there was a bit of a problem here. But yeah, it was, I guess, a subconscious comfort, if you like, to get away from some of the other struggles.
Never going to be one of the cool kids, you write. Food was my escape. Your father, though, at one point just lays down the law over this, and again, I suppose this is a moment that could have gone either way as well. What did he say to you?
My father was, we're very, very close, and we are very, very close, and we've lived this whole journey together, and, I could never have done anything without him. But, you know, in those teenage years, I was a bit dark against the world, if you like, so, you know. Even someone like my father, I was fighting against, and it was difficult times there for us. And at the end of the day, I brought a lot of it on myself. I was just, I was at war against the world, if you like. So I made life difficult for people around me. And at the end of the day, he was just trying to help me, you know, set targets with weight, try and put me on a good path, a bit of tough love, and you know, he did all the right things, but I just probably didn't respond to it in the way that was expected.
He said, basically, get serious or you're not going to keep competing. Was there a moment of showdown, or did you gradually just begin to get serious for various reasons?
Yeah, well, I always had the intention to be serious. Like, it's what I love doing, but, you know, anyone that's been involved with food and things like that, you know, it's easier said than done when you're not in a happy place in life. So, yeah, of course, I always tried, for 2 or 3 years it didn't quite work out. So, but you know, he was trying to put targets because he knew how important rallying was to me, and that's what I wanted to do. And he also wanted best for me as a human being to be healthy and happy and everything. So he tried to merge the two and put some targets in place to reward me then to let me drive the car. You know, up until that point, my personal life was completely separate to my sporting life, if you like, and that was the first time where the two of them become intertwined, and I guess that's what I struggled to accept at the first.
Another component that you bring to the sport is your knowledge of cars and how they work mechanically, as opposed to just getting in the thing and driving it. How significant has that been to your driving career?
Yeah, I think hugely, especially going through the ranks and the support categories. Okay, once you're at WRC level, you do actually have to bring that back and just focus on driving. You know, when there's 250 people on the team, then your job is there just to do the best job of driving the car. But before that, you know, in New Zealand Championship, going through the support categories, you know, having a good understanding of how the car worked meant that we're able to set it up maybe a little bit quicker, get some extra information, have a good bit of mechanical sympathy on rough events and try and look after the car, because as they say, to finish first must finish. So, I think that helped me a lot. And you know, I'm not a trained mechanic by any means, but a lot of it was a self-taught. And back in those early days, you know, if I broke the car, I had to fix it. You know, my father, he'd tell me or show me how to do things and then go about it from there. So,
the other thing you were doing is you set your ambitions and climbed higher, wanting to win your first New Zealand Rally Champs. The other thing you were doing with your co driver was doing your own pace notes, and just explain a little bit more about where all this sits in the crucial series of processes that that rally driving is, not just getting in the car and putting your foot on the pedal. Where do they sit?
Yeah, the pace notes is one of the most crucial factors in the car, and that's obviously the co-driver's role. And the co-driver's role in the car is just as important as the driver. In fact, you know, they can probably afford to make less mistakes than what we can as a driver. So there's a lot of pressure on the co-driver, and yeah, the pace notes are a shorthand description of how we describe the road. And it's like putting pieces of a puzzle together. So as he's reading the pace notes, that's helping me visualise exactly what's coming up, the gradient of the corner, what's after the corner, what speed I can take, what line, what apex. And it's just a whole lot of cryptic information that we subconsciously react to as a driver. So over time that develops. You know, when you start back 15 years ago in New Zealand, you start with a very, very basic system that's supplied by organisers. But then as you start moving forward, you start, you know, finding out what you want from your own pace note system, because every driver's got their own unique system. And then that's when you start writing your own pace notes from scratch. You know, we drive down a piece of road. I read to my co-driver, John, what I want the pace note to say. He writes it down. We'll go back through a second time when he reads them back to me so we can check them. And then the first time we drive them at speed is when we're at the rally. So, you know, those pace notes are absolutely crucial because, you know, we're not going around a racetrack where you can remember every corner that's the same every 12th time. You know, in a rally, every single corner is different over the course of 300-400 kilometres. So to remember every corner and every obstacle and everything is impossible. So the pace notes is a key part to that.
This is where you and John Kennard had the advantage when you started competing internationally, because you always did your own notes from the start. There's a couple of recces, I think, isn't there, of any field, but because you already did yours, or any course, because you did yours from the start, it meant on that second run round you were refining, you were perfecting.
Yeah, like in New Zealand, generally reconnaissance here are one pass in New Zealand, which is quite unique. Everywhere else in the world, reconnaissance tend to be over two passes, so people tend to do their information over two passes, which is, of course, gives them more time and more opportunity. So while sometimes here in New Zealand we actually complain that one pass is not enough, I think for my career, having one pass pace recces was actually very good, because it learnt and taught you to do more information and do more work on that first pass. So it created more opportunities for us to do extra stuff on the second pass that maybe others weren't.
Hayden Paddon, my guest, on his book, Driven. You're listening to 9 to Noon on RNZ National. 29 minutes to 11 it is. Well, New Zealand used to be a league in the World Rally Champs, and you competed on it in New Zealand. But what was the break to getting overseas?
Definitely the biggest break was the Pro Star Driver Scholarship. You know, we won that in 2009, which we had to go over to Malaysia and Australia to qualify for, and then we had to try and beat the other young drivers from this part of the world. But to win that scholarship was huge. It was effectively a $1 million scholarship that gave us 6 rounds fully funded in the Production World Rally Championship the following year, which is about a Tier 3 championship, if you like. Without that, we never had the finances or the backing to make that step to Europe. So that was absolutely crucial.
The career built and built, and what were the highlights for you as you kept building an international career now?
Yeah, there's been so many highlights, and not just results as well, just, you know, the amount of work that went behind to do what we did. You know, I'm incredibly proud of the HPRG company we set up when we, following that 2010 year with the scholarship, the following year we knew we had to fund it ourselves and to stay there. And, you know, in this sport, if you disappear for a year, you'll never get back. So we knew it was absolutely vital to get back there. And over the course of 3 years through our HPRG company, we funded just over $3 million, I think, all from here in New Zealand, all people that believed in our dream, believed in what we were doing. And that was so, so humbling that so many people supported us and helped us and helped make those following years possible. And that's something I'm incredibly proud of. And then, of course, we, you know, were able to win some championships along the way. And then to finally get signed up with a manufacturer team with Hyundai in 2014 was an absolute dream come true. You know, that's basically like me as a kid when I was sitting there watching the rally videos at home. It was like me dreaming to be an astronaut. You know, so to be actually signed by a manufacturer team was very surreal at the time, and something I, you know, I'm very proud of as well.
So you went from, with HBRG, the company you set up, you went from 24 hours essentially cold calling everyone you knew in between your training and your racing and everything else. You went from that to being signed to a manufacturer just in a few short years.
Yeah, well, it's probably lucky, because to be honest, I think after those 3 years of funding and doing those support categories in the World Championship, we were well into the red. We'd dug ourselves a very big financial hole, and we're trying everything on how we could do things and find ways around things. And ultimately, if that opportunity with the other didn't come up at that time, then that was it for us. We were exhausted, all our avenues, all our options. Already the previous year had been incredibly tough, so we're very fortunate through quite a number of years here, actually, that we're probably in the right place at the right time, and things tend to happen, as I say, at the right time. So without that, we probably wouldn't have got to the WRC.
They bring their demands, though. And what were the demands of racing for a manufacturer?
Yeah, look, I think it's the same with any professional sport. Obviously, the elite level of it means you obviously got to be preparing yourself to a high level. There's a lot of pressure. The pressure and expectations is the biggest part. And when you're racing for your own team and everything, you sort of answerable to yourself. When you're racing for a manufacturer team, you're answerable to CEOs and big bosses in Germany and Korea. And it's very, very cutthroat, and you can't hide from any of it. So, but also, I think a big demand for me personally, and that no one really fully understood while we were there, is that, you know, we were the only driver from outside Europe in the World Championship. And, you know, we spent 6-7 years living in Europe, and we were only living in Europe for the sport. We had no family over there, no friends. I was never the social type. You know, I was there to work and focus 100% on what we were there to do. And, you know, you compare that to other drivers who, after rallies, would go home and back to their normal country with their culture and their surroundings and, you know, all the stuff that I normally have when I come back to New Zealand and where you feel comfortable and happy. We didn't have any of that. And you know, over time, that started to wear a little bit thin, and you started to maybe not be quite so happy in the environment. Of course, I always loved the driving, but essentially you only did that once or twice a month. The rest of the time was preparation and work towards the rally.
You had become truly a professional. In fact, someone in the book are quoted saying you're one of the most professional drivers they've ever seen. In one case, the most professional driver they'd ever seen in the way you went about your business. And you had built this career. But as we said, there were ups and there were downs, and 2017 was a shocker, a terrible year. 100,000 people can line the roads of these World Rally Champs, right, these big events. And it's extraordinary these things don't happen more often, but you were one of the unlucky ones. And at the rally of Monte Carlo, there's an accident and a spectator is killed. And of all the moments in time, Hayden, that you've been through, how do you describe that one? Is it a moment where you question everything that you do for a living?
Oh, yes and no. Like, you know, the situation was incredibly bad. Like, it was one of those moments after it happened. It's like, you know, this can't be happening. Like, you've heard of many close calls in the sport, and you've heard of some spectators who have unfortunately passed away, and maybe some smaller events around Europe, but at World Championship level, it hadn't happened for a number of years. It just didn't really feel real at the time. At the same time, I was doing what I loved doing in terms of with the driving. I'd done it all my life. It never deterred me from that fact, but it did make you question things, and the fact that, you know, there's a lot more to the sport than just us driving in the car. And when we're in the car, you know, we accept the dangers of our sport. And if an accident happens or if we get hurt in the car, you know, we hop in the car knowing that danger. But the spectators shouldn't be in a dangerous situation. And that was the part that was hard for me to accept. And whether he was standing in the right or wrong place was completely irrelevant. At the end of the day, someone got killed and they shouldn't have. So, we tried to work with people closely after that to ensure that it wouldn't happen again and hope that that man's life wasn't lost in vain, and the fact that, you know, maybe the sport could learn from it and make sure that it doesn't happen anymore.
As life so often does, it delivers all its blows in a short succession, and your long relationship ends that year as well, 10 years, I think, and you mentioned the circumstances in which you'd been living overseas all the time and a really different environment from your average relationship. And then the blow comes from Hyundai as well. And we talk about highs and lows, but they're just words, aren't they? How did you cope with a pile-on like that?
Yeah, 2017 was a really, really tough year. It seemed like everything that could go wrong did go wrong throughout that whole year, from personally, professionally, even some of our corporate partners. It was unbelievable how things just it was like a domino effect. It just, once it started, it carried on. And you know, we tried everything. You know, every time we got back in the car and did another event, we just, did a full recess. And we didn't let things get on top of us, but we were just unlucky. A lot of the things that happened that year, we were simply unlucky. It was a very character-building year. But it did mean, come 2018, it was, there was a fire in the belly to put that right and to work even harder to show that still we belonged and to overcome those obstacles and become stronger for it.
It looked like you were going to have a second chance there with Fiesta, a second manufacturer job. But this again is where you mentioned the word luck, and no matter how well you plan and how professional you are, stuff can happen. You were warming up, I think, a warm-up event with the Fiesta for the M Sport squad, right? And yeah. From Finland Rally, for the Finland Rally, that's right. And despite having done the recce and having done the pace notes and having got the course sorted, what is it that caused a crash?
It was just a testing accident, unfortunately. On the Monday prior to the event, it was our first time driving the car, and testing means you use one piece of road that you go up and down all day and you make setup changes between each run. And unfortunately, after one of the runs, a rocket became exposed in the middle of the road and it just lifted the car momentarily in the front. The corner we took exactly the same speed, is the same line, everything as the previous five runs, but there was something that changed in the road. So, the margins are very fine at that speed and at this level, and unfortunately we just got sucked into the ditch on the outside and the rest is history. But, as a sport, you accept the ups and downs. That was incredibly gutting with the amount of effort it took to get there, but it's not the end of the road. We made a good impression with the team in the week beforehand, and we're still working with the team now to be back there again this year. You just have to learn to dust these things off, because there's so many unpredictable things in sport. That's why we love sport. If it's predictable and we knew it was going to happen, nobody would watch it. So, dust yourself off, get back on the horse and do it again.
You sound like one New Zealand cricket captain with that one. That is the reality of sport. But still, you need the resilience to manage that. And one thing you have done is sort of had this business strand the whole time running as well, which gives you that protection against having all the eggs in solely in one basket. You're moving Paddon Rally Sport Company from Auckland to Cromwell. And what are the plans there?
Yeah, look, my life's rally, so that's even beyond WRC. So, now we've got our own team here and we've got the building blocks in place to, ultimately what I'd love to do is take our own New Zealand team to the world and we go win with our own New Zealand team. That's a very, long-term plan, 5-10 years. But when you look at what motorsport will look like in 5-10 years' time, it will be completely different to what it is now with, the direction the automotive industry's going. There's a lot of alternative energy cars out there now, and EV in particular, motorsport needs to be the cutting edge technology to the automotive industry, and at the moment it's starting to actually lag behind. So we see an opportunity there to try and get ahead, particularly in the rally game and introduce an EV car. And so that's what we launched yesterday. We've got one of the first EV rally cars in the world that we're developing at the moment with our engineers. We've got 7 people on site, very, very smart, clever young people, and we're all working to make sure this is a success and put us on the world map in terms of motorsport with our own New Zealand team.
Thank you, Hayden. Hayden Paddon. The book is Driven, My Story.